Whoever you are, we welcome you. Wherever you come from, we welcome you. Whomever you love, we welcome you. My name is Melissa Carvel-Zimmer, and it is my privilege to serve as the minister of this congregation. I'm joined in welcoming you this morning by Lori McGee, who's serving as our worship associate. We're glad to be together today and glad to welcome you to this religious community, a community that seeks to celebrate and to serve. I would like to extend a special welcome to those of you who are with us for the first time this morning. We are always delighted to have guests at our services and hope that you will stay afterward for our social hour, which is held downstairs in Fessenden Hall. Additionally, if you find that you would like more information about the life and work of this community, I encourage you to complete the guest cards, which you can find in the racks and the pews before you. You can place your completed guest card in the offering basket when it comes to you later in the service, or hand it to a representative of our membership committee who would be glad to greet you at the visitor's table after the service. The visitor's table is just around the corner outside the sanctuary doors. Ours is a church that strives to practice the fragile art of hospitality, and so in that spirit, I invite you to take a moment to turn and greet your neighbors. In addition to asking you to silence your cell phones, I would like to direct your attention to the thread from the web. That is the insert in your order of service. There you will find several announcements as well as a calendar of events for the week ahead in the church. There are a few items that I would like to bring to your attention. The talent show scheduled for mid-May has been postponed until June. More information will be available in future threads from the web and in the June newsletter. The Master Plan Committee is hosting a forum for you to ask your questions and give your comments about our draft 5-year strategic plan. They will be hosting a table during coffee hour downstairs after the service, and I understand ice cream is available for all who have a question or comment to share. The Women, Stress, and Recession Support Group at Kent State University has pushed back the starting date. If you are still interested, there's still time, please let me know. And I also want to remind you that the annual symposium on democracy at Kent State begins and will have events all day tomorrow and Tuesday. More information is available on their website. Next week, you're again invited to join us for worship at 9:30 and 11:15. I will be leading the service accompanied by worship associate Danny Beal. The title of the sermon is Mothers of Peace. At the end of today's service, Lori and I would be glad to greet you at the rear of the sanctuary. And once again, I bid you welcome.
I light this candle for the present. Like Cal Walker and Hallie sung to us about a Peruvian greeting, Margaret Wheatley in one of her books tells of us of Zimbabwe greeting. Could everyone please stand in body or spirit? Now face the aisle. Please look at someone across the aisle, even if they're not looking at you. All right, so now repeat after me. This side over here. Did you sleep?
Did you sleep?
This side. I slept well if you slept well. This side. I slept. This side. How are you? This side. I am here if you are here.
I am here if you are here.
This side. I am here.
I am here.
Thank you. You may sit down.
Praise voices ringing, blue polar.
That song was wonderful. Thank you. We have the exciting opportunity this morning to acknowledge two children in our congregation who have completed the Love and Help emblem for the Religion and Life badge for their Cub Scout troops. At this time, I would like to invite Gavin Van Winkle Bright and Alan Kearns to come forward with their Akilahs, who are their mentors. So as they receive their certificates and badges and emblems this morning, Gavin and Alan thought that you might have some questions about what this all means. So they have prepared some questions and some answers.
What do you do in Scouts?
We do a lot of things, including whittling and learning to make different knots. We also learn to whip stitch a rope, which means to tie the end so it doesn't fray. What is Scouts?
Scouts is an organization for boys. You can do activities and earn badges. Why did you join Scouts, and do you like scouting?
I joined Scouts because I thought it would be fun. My friends told me fun things about scouting. I like scouting. We do tons of fun activities. Why did you join Scouts, and do you like scouting?
I joined Scouts because it looked fun and my brother did it. Did you learn anything working on this religious emblem?
Yes. I learned there's a lot more UU churches than I thought there were. I also learned a person who started the Red Cross was a UU. I learned about many famous UUs. Did you learn anything working on this religious emblem?
Yes, USA, Mexico, and Canada have Unitarian Universalist churches, too.
In recognition of the work that you have done to complete the Religion and Life emblem, your Akilahs will now award you with the Love and Help pin. You also are being awarded today with the chalice symbol patch for your uniform, and Gavin, your cup master sent along an additional patch for you in recognition of your accomplishment, and these are your certificates certifying that you have completed the Love and Help emblem for the Religion and Life badge. Congratulations. Take your hand. Thank you.
What are the spiritual questions you ask yourself most often? Here are some of mine. Is there a supreme being? What form, if any, does it take? Does that being care about us and what we do, think, or say? Is there an afterlife? And if so, what is it like? How do I really feel about capital punishment? Does the good I do on this earth really matter? How can I know? What is right action? What is wrong action? What is my legacy? What are your questions? Let us continue to explore the answers together. Come, let us worship together.
Praise this common miracle, life. Growing, hoping, dreaming, tough and tender. Praise this common love, sharing, reaching, blessing all who fall in its circle. Praise this day we have been given, and give us to live it well. Amen, and blessed be. Our reading comes from Rainer Maria Rilke's Letters to a Young Poet. He writes, "I would like to beg you, dear sir, as well as I can, to have patience with everything unresolved in your heart, and to try to love the questions themselves as if they were locked rooms or books written in a very foreign language. Don't search for the answers, which could not be given to you now, because you would not be able to live them. And the point is to live everything. Live the questions now. Perhaps then, someday far in the future, you will gradually, without even noticing it, live your way into the answers." I have three sisters. Of them, only one shares my commitment to religious life. This sister and I both spend a lot of time in our respective churches. We both ground our lives in our religious traditions and try to live our lives faithfully. In some ways, we are really quite similar. But when it comes to the content of our faith, my sister and I could not be more different. I am a liberal Unitarian Universalist. She is a conservative evangelical Christian. This has been challenging for us and for our relationship. Over the years, we have had several exchanges, some heated, especially the ones about reproductive choice. She would ask me pointed questions about the Bible and God and Jesus, and I would respond with arrow-sharp questions about religious freedom, tolerance, and justice. I think it's fair to say that neither of us found those combative exchanges particularly satisfying, and yet neither of us seemed capable of finding a way out of our ideological standoff. The pattern replayed itself until finally we had a conversation to end the conversation. Stumbling over familiar ground of disagreement, we came to a fork in the road. She pled fear and sorrow over my inevitable eternal damnation. Seriously. And I countered with fear and sorrow over the dissolution of our relationship if she couldn't find a way to respect me and my choices. We held firm in our camps, balancing on the edge of heartbreak and broken relationship until, finally, we called a truce. We agreed to let God be judge. That was 5 years ago, and we haven't had a conversation about religion since. I was reminded of all this a couple of weeks ago when I went to the community dinner at the Islamic Society of Akron and Kent. My partner Ellen and I were eating and talking with a group of Muslim women and their children. We covered many conversation topics, including children and food, hair salons, and high school, until we finally came to homosexuality. While Ellen ended up surveying the dessert table, one woman leaned over to confirm her suspicions about the nature of our relationship. I told her that Ellen is my partner and that we are lesbians. But just moments before, I had stood to identify myself as clergy. This was very perplexing. Didn't I respect the Bible? I told her that I thought the Bible was open to many and varied interpretations. I went on to explain that even if I agreed that the Bible condemns homosexuality, I'm aware that the Bible condemns a lot of things that people no longer consider threats to moral life and condones some things that we now consider immoral. She wasn't buying it. As far as she's concerned, the Bible and the Quran are unambiguous upon this point. If I have concern for my soul when this life is over, she told me, I really ought to reread the Bible and consider the choices I have made. She told me this with a smile, her hand gently covering mine. I returned the smile, thanked her for her concern, and conversation continued in another vein. When I was in theological school, I took a class on religious pluralism in which we discussed the challenges of faithful conversation across the chasms of difference. We acknowledged the problem of evangelism. Some traditions urge their followers to consider every conversation about faith an opportunity to proselytize. As a result, those conversations are typically not true exchanges. When someone considers their religious tradition to be the only one true tradition, it can be very difficult for that person to acknowledge that their truth is limited and partial. But neither are the rest of us immune from such hubris. I have encountered just as many fundamentalist atheists and self-righteous liberals as I have evangelical proselytizing Christians. Problems arise whenever we begin to believe that the truth that we have discerned for ourselves is the only truth the whole truth, or the superior truth, not only for ourselves, but for all people. And as the theologian Paul Nitter explains, this is where we need to be suspicious of our truth claims, for it is at this point that truth can become ideology, at this point when truth claims can become power claims. Despite the challenges of conversation, I believe that the antidote to arrogance lies in trustworthy conversation. Whenever we are really able to talk and listen to people who are different from us, the more our vision and understanding of truth will expand. Nitter calls this looking through another's telescope. If we can look through our neighbor's telescopes, he writes, we can see things that we missed with our own. And the more differently built and angled those telescopes are, the more new things we're going to be able to see. With other telescopes, we can see areas of the universe that our own telescopes weren't able to reach and weren't able to bring into focus. Now, granted, this kind of sharing can seem not only risky, but even dangerous if we are not sure the conversation is going to be safe. Therefore, the challenge lies in learning how to create the conditions that will make for respectful and trustworthy conversations. I frequently find inspiration and edification from the conversations that Krista Tippett hosts on her public radio program, Speaking of Faith. Each week, she invites a guest to share their insights that they have gained about religion, ethics, and ideas with her and countless radio listeners. I always find these conversations not only intellectually stimulating, but also tender and moving. Though they are public, they are also incredibly intimate. This week, I had an opportunity to hear Krista Tippett speak in Cleveland about the way she structures the conversation she has with her guests. She uses an approach she learned from a Benedictine community in central Minnesota called First Person. The First Person approach to religious speech essentially requires that each person speak only for themselves. They're not to speak for the church or scripture or God, but only from their own experience. Using this approach, Tippett explains, humanizes doctrine and disallows abstractions about God. It requires the speaker to do the hard and holy work of plumbing their own soul. This is why the conversations always sound so intimate on her show. They are. With the skills of thoughtful questioning and respectful listening, Tippett invites her conversation partners to go deep. Her own movements as a questioner are informed by the insights of the Quaker author and educator Parker Palmer, who speaks with wisdom won from experience about the discipline of listening to our lives. These are his words. In our culture, we tend to gather information in ways that do not work very well when the source is the human soul. The soul is not responsive to subpoenas or cross-examinations. At best, it will stand in the dock long enough to plead the Fifth Amendment. At worst, it will jump bail and never be heard from again. The soul speaks its truth only under quiet, inviting, and trustworthy conditions. The soul is like a wild animal, tough, resilient, savvy, self-sufficient, and yet exceedingly shy. If we want to see a wild animal, the last thing we should do is go crashing through the woods, shouting for the creature to come out. But if we're willing to walk quietly into the woods and sit silently for an hour or two at the base of a tree, the creature we are waiting for may well emerge, and out of the corner of our eye, we will catch a glimpse of the precious wildness we seek. It's simple to proclaim doctrine and recite creeds. It's easy to make declarations about what we do and do not believe. It is much, much more difficult, but ultimately so much more satisfying to try to listen for answers to open, substantial, and challenging questions that engage our minds and touch our hearts. This is how we can strengthen our own grasp on the truth that we have been given to understand. And as Rilke so fervently advised the young poet, living with the questions is part of how we live life whole. Krista Tippett's own journey to living with the questions has been deeply influenced by the works of Thomas Merton, who wrote that anxiety is the mark of spiritual insecurity. It is the fruit of unanswered questions. And there is a far worse anxiety, a far worse insecurity, which comes from being afraid to ask the right questions because they might turn out to have no answer. One of the moral diseases we communicate to one another in society comes from huddling together in the pale light of an insufficient answer to a question we are afraid to ask. Inspired by this insight, Tippett has given her life over to questions. "I have become a crusader against insufficient questions," she writes, "and against insufficient answers that stand in prematurely and destructively for both justice and mercy." In her address earlier this week, Tippett told us about an interview with the physician and healer Rachel Naomi Remen. Asked to reflect on the moral impact of this recession we are enduring in our lives, Remen said that what interests her is the kinds of questions people are asking ourselves. What can be trusted? What will sustain me? What do I really need? These are profoundly spiritual questions, and the sort often asked in moments of crisis or on the beginning of a spiritual search. But here we are asking them in the grocery store and over the morning newspaper. What can be trusted? Who will sustain me? What do I really need? If we follow these questions, Rachel Naomi Remen believes, we will find ourselves led to a deeper, more passionate way of living and to a deeper, more passionate connection to a much larger reality. I believe it too. And I would add to her questions, who and what do I love? What matters most? How am I called? How shall I live? These are my questions. You add yours. This church is a place to practice asking and answering worthy questions. In building your own theology classes and small group ministry meetings especially, but also in long, slow walks by the river and here in this sanctuary, let us live our questions together. Perhaps then someday we will gradually, without even noticing it, live our way into the answers. May it be so. Amen, and blessed be. Will the ushers please come forward? We are delighted to have our guests with us this morning, and we hope that as the offering basket passes you by, you will take a candle as a token of our hospitality and welcome. We are glad you are with us. Love is the spirit of this church, and service is its law. This is our great covenant, to dwell together in peace, to seek the truth in love, and to help one another. The offering will now be gratefully received.
Have you lost all sense of feeling? Have you given up or given in? Are you living or just breathing? The answer lies within. Does love tie you in a knot? Does it seep into your skin? Does it tell you all the things that you forgot? Can it sing the song within? If love is the question you've been wanting to ask, then love is the answer. Yes, yes, yes. Am I shadow beneath my mother's gaze? Am I a dream inside my lover's eye? Can I ask you just one question? Who am I? Who am I? Does my life make a difference? Am I living to full capacity? If I stopped asking all these questions, who would I be? Who would I be? If love is the question you've been wanting to ask, love is the answer. Yes, yes, yes. We are living questions, stepping out from the past. Our lives will be the answers and our voices in the future will last. Have you lost all sense of feeling? Have you given up or given in? Are you living or just breathing? The answer lies within. If love is the question you've been wanting to ask, then love is the answer. Yes, 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 yes. We are living questions, stepping out from the past. Our lives will be the answers, and our voices in the future will last.
have gathered today in dedication to the proposition that beneath all our diversity there lies a unity which binds us one to another, to the earth, and to the spaces between the stars. We have gathered in witness. Let us take our witness out into the world. Go in peace.